from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro. In 1981, American Airlines launched AAA Advantage, the world's first mileage-based frequent flyer program, to encourage customer loyalty. Today, frequent flyer programs are everywhere and massively profitable for airlines, largely because they set the rules and they set them to their advantage. Maybe that's a good thing if it discourages frequent flying. But frankly, I'm going to fly in 2020, and I'd rather do it at a fair price. So we've invited some experts to help us parse the fine print. We're talking with Michelle Barron, travel news editor for Afar.com. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
And on the phone, we've got Eric Rosen, travel editor and writer. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we'll get into climate change guilt momentarily, but first, Eric, I want to ask, how is it that American Airlines, owner of the world's biggest frequent flyer program, earns so much of its profits from this program instead of actually flying passenger tickets?
Well, the short answer is it basically sells its miles to its credit card issuer partners, Citibank and Barclays, so that they can offer them as incentives to lure in new credit card holders. And that's pretty much it. So they place a value on those miles. The banks buy them from the airline and then can offer them to new consumers.
Michelle, do these credit cards the flight attendants are endlessly flogging make any sense to the consumer, or does the house always win?
Honestly, I don't personally use travel credit cards. It's funny because when I thought about coming on here, I know that, people are really passionate about their frequent flyer miles and about these credit card programs. And I personally find them pretty confusing.
It's really hard to understand. I was saying to the forum production staff earlier, it's almost like taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, but in the case of taxes, you can hire an accountant. I don't know what you do here.
Right.
Yeah, except maybe talk to you guys. Eric, what do you think? Are there plans that make sense, or really should you just give up and just buy retail?
Absolutely not. Nope. I'll come at it from the other side from you,
okay.
Michelle, and say that many airline credit cards, hotel credit cards, travel rewards cards in general are worth having. You do need to put in some time to understand how some of them work and which ones might be best for you. But the good news is you can figure that out fairly easily by asking a few simple questions about your travel goals, what your spending habits are, and things as simple as where you live and what airlines you're most likely to fly. I think what becomes overwhelming is the fact that there are dozens of these rewards cards out there, and they each seem to tout similar benefits and claim to be the best. And that obviously makes it a little difficult for your average consumer to pick the one that's right for them and to understand the program ins and outs of each one. But if you focus your efforts on a couple at a time, you can really take advantage of some tremendous rewards opportunities.
So walk us through with Jane Q customer. Let's just say she flies short hops domestically 10 times a year, maybe goes all out for two international trips a year, and she's based in San Francisco. Go. which card
like
should she check
her
out?
Best life.
Yeah.
So well done her. I would basically, in San Francisco, it's obviously a hub city for United, so she should probably concentrate her activity on that airline for the time being. Again, I think it will depend on what she wants to use her miles for. If she wants to get one or two of those domestic short hops for free and one of those international long hauls for free, she should concentrate possibly on stockpiling airline miles for that long haul so she can upgrade herself to business or first class. And then maybe think about, for those short hops, getting a card that offers something more like a cashback reward possibility, like one of the Capital One rewards cards, like the Capital One Venture or the Bank of America travel rewards cards, where it makes more sense to earn multiple cents back per dollar on your spending and then put those towards a travel purchase that happens to be inexpensive.
Does that sound about right to you, Michelle?
Yeah, no, and I was just going to add, in terms of on the miles side, you know, I also always recommend to people to really just, if it all seems very overwhelming, to really just stick with one or two airlines, the airlines that they're most familiar with, maybe the one that is, you know, their local hub that they're going to end up booking the most, and just really devote themselves to that one or two program. Don't get overwhelmed by, you know, trying to sign up for every single program, remembering all the different your you know, mileage numbers, and just one or two is fine for, you know, like you said, the average traveler. I think it can get overwhelming for the average person to try and sort out multiple different frequent flyer programs.
And they change all the time.
They do. And they're changing, you know, and, you know, honestly, they're getting worse. You know, they've the airlines are getting away from the award chart model where you could see sort of the set miles that you would need for certain flights in advance, going towards more of what's called a dynamic pricing model. So almost like they're pricing the redemption flights the same way they do their in regular dollars. So you have to actually go through and see, put in the flight that you want, put in the dates, and then you'll find out how many miles it will take. So it's much more difficult now to find out how much it's going to cost to redeem a flight in miles, and it's also getting harder to get status.
Eric, I want to keep playing with this idea of Jane Q customer. Let's give you a little more detail. She's got family in Singapore. Should she consider having a frequent flyer program with Singapore Airlines instead of a domestic carrier because there are partnerships that she can take advantage of when she's flying domestically, but maybe she's getting the better deal if she knows she's headed to Singapore to go with that airline?
Absolutely. There are lots of great reasons to consider foreign frequent flyer programs. Singapore Airlines happens to be an excellent example because it's a transfer partner of American Express Membership Rewards, Chase Ultimate Rewards, and a number of other programs. So you don't have to get a Singapore Airlines credit card. I don't believe there's one currently available in the United States, for instance, but you can still concentrate your flight activity on that airline, credit your flights on its Starlines partners like United, for example, or Air Canada, Lufthansa, and credit those to your Singapore Airlines KrisFlyer account. Stock up your KrisFlyer account with points you earn from other credit cards like an Amex card or a Chase card like the Sapphire Preferred or Sapphire Reserve for those tickets that you want. And one thing, if you are interested in flying Singapore Airlines in particular, they tend to release a lot more premium award space to members of their own program. So if she wants to get there in business class, her best bet will actually be stockpiling those Singapore Airlines miles. And another little benefit of concentrating on a foreign frequent flyer program, and this one in particular, is that if you earn Starlines Gold status, that's a mid-tier status, you're flying about 50,000 miles a year, you can use United's club lounges here in the United States when flying United, which is not the case if you earn status with United. So she'll reap a few unintended benefits, I imagine, but really see that strategy pay off.
Michelle, what happens to airline miles when a person divorces or when they die?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually don't know. I actually have no idea if the airline miles can stay on, if they can kind of gift them to somebody else or somebody else can inherit them. I don't know what happens to airline miles in that example.
Eric, any thoughts?
Yeah, I can jump in on this one because airlines, as you noted at the beginning of the program, airlines can set the program terms completely by themselves. Obviously, they're loyalty programs and they want members to be happy with them to a certain extent. But really, what most of them claim is that the miles are null and void as soon as the person who has accrued them passes away. They will, in many cases, make exceptions to those rules for loved ones or spouses who, you know, send a written request and stuff. In terms of divorce, my mother happens to be a family law attorney. And so what she's told me is that they have to place a value, they have to agree upon a value for the miles accrued over the course of the marriage and basically either divide them or provide some sort of equal and opposite value to the spouse who isn't getting them. But it gets a little complicated, but they do have formulations for that.
We're talking about frequent flyer programs, the good, the bad, and the ugly, with Michelle Barron and Eric Rosen. Join the conversation. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum, or find our page on Facebook or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. I guess this is as good a moment as any, guys, to talk about a new report commissioned by the UK's Committee on Climate Change, which comes to the conclusion that we should scrap frequent flyer plans because they stimulate demand. And instead of all-you-can-eat models, we should switch to something where we increase penalties on a person the more he or she flies. Any thoughts on this, Michelle?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think frequent flyers are flying a lot because of some kind of reckless disregard for the environment. I think they fly a lot because they have to. They are typically flying a lot because they have to work, they have to go see family, they're business travelers. So I don't know that eliminating frequent flyer programs is going to solve the problem. In the next 20 years, the number of air passengers is expected to double. And a lot of that growth is going to be coming out of Asia. I just don't see the correlation between, you know, getting rid of frequent flyer programs and actually having an impact on climate change, though I do think that impact is an important topic. I just don't know this is the right way to get at it.
There are a lot of economists who say you want an economic indicator to nudge people in one direction or another.
True, true. And honestly, I wish my hope would be that we would arrive at a point where airlines would need to prove to customers that what they're doing, that they're reducing emissions, that they're, you know, swapping in biofuels, that they're doing carbon offsets, and that would in turn have an effect on their bottom line, that people would start to pick the airlines that they fly based on their carbon footprint. And I think we're starting to see that a bit. I think we're starting to see people, you know, through the flight shame movement, we're starting to see There is a changing tide where airlines feel some of that pressure to let the flying public know that they are making some changes.
Eric, do you want to weigh in here?
I mean, I agree with everything Michelle has just said. I think the frequent flyer program argument is an interesting one. The studies seem to talk about the most frequent flyers and the impact that they're having on the environment. And I'll say that the people I think they're targeting who are the ones maybe flying excessively in order to maintain their status or to rack up miles in extremely cheap ways are probably a tiny, tiny minority and should perhaps think more about what they are doing to the environment. And that airlines could consider things like placing some sort of emissions rate on people in premium cabins whose footprint is much larger than those of us who fly in the back of the plane more often. But these are businesses, and they're going to find other ways to incentivize customers to keep flying them, whether it's a frequent flyer program or something by another name. And rather than penalizing them, we need to incentivize them, as Michelle has suggested, for choosing more sustainable measures and initiatives and making sure that the industry can survive into the next century.
Well, we've got a bunch of calls coming in, so let's get to it. Let's talk to John in San Jose. Hi, John. Oh, let's see. That doesn't seem to be working. Let's try, how about Malik in San Jose as well?
Hey, I had a question. So there are credit cards who offer like high number of miles when you first place order a new credit card, like 50,000 miles. So does it make sense to order that credit card before the travel, use those miles, and then?
All right. So Eric, we seem to have lost Malik. I'll just summarize here. Does it make sense to order a credit card, get the miles being offered, use those miles, and then cancel the credit card?
I mean, that's a strategy I think a lot of people use. I would just say there are a few reasons to warn against something like that. Those sign-up bonuses are wonderful incentives for new cardholders. They're often easy to achieve with reasonable minimum spending requirements that you should always be able to tackle responsibly. I would never suggest running up a balance in pursuit of a sign-up bonus like that, because you'll end up paying exorbitant interest fees and damaging your credit. I'll also say that you should perhaps consider not doing that, because those factors like credit history, number of accounts opened, credit to debt utilization, things like that, all impact your credit score. So opening a credit card and closing it within a short period of time and doing that repeatedly will not have a great impact on your credit score over time and will also then possibly prevent you from getting lucrative sign-up bonuses in the future as other issuers rate your credit worthiness.
Well, Malik, thank you for asking a question that's been on my mind for some time. Now I know. Let's go to another call. Hopefully this is the same John in San Jose.
Yes, hello.
Hi. What's your question?
So after many years of flying, I have rather large accounts. I'm wondering, as the airlines do reduce the benefit, is there anything that you believe the users can do to influence the airlines to at least stop where they are?
Michelle?
I honestly don't think so. I mean, I hate to be discouraging. I mean, of course, you know, feel free to communicate with your airline if you do have big balances. I do think they will listen to a certain degree. I once heard a great recommendation, which was to always feel free to reach out to your airlines on social media channels and maybe try and get to them in a more public forum. But I think that the airlines are going to continue on the trajectory they're on simply because there are more people in the air. There are more people that are getting status. And I think it's just only natural that they're going to make it harder for everyone to get to those higher tiers.
Lori writes, I've wished that all the programs would offer the opportunity to compensate for carbon emissions when you purchase a ticket. How would we get that to happen? I guess, Michelle, you're suggesting try tweeting?
Yeah, it never hurts.
Tom writes, the public would be far better served if the airlines did away with their frequent flyer programs. I'm old enough to remember when they did not exist. Get rid of the credit cards and the so-called rewards programs and let the airlines simply lower their fares. Eric, do you want to take that one on?
I'm not sure that's what would actually take place if that happened. So I also have to say, like, we're here. So adjust to the present. It's been a long time since the time before frequent flyer programs existed, and it's time to get used to it. That I think maybe you feel a little left behind because of all the complications that airlines have placed on their frequent flyer programs, but there are still wonderful reasons to use them. And if you don't want to use them, as Michelle said, she doesn't have airline credit cards, you can still enjoy the services of an airline without having to worry about the program.
Let's go now to Darren in Oakland.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I use the United Mileage card, and I just wanted to make a point about inheriting miles. When my husband passed away, he had 78,000 miles, and United did transfer them to me after I provided them with a death certificate and a letter. I felt like it was something that I had to track. They weren't, once I made the initial outreach, they didn't keep in touch with me. I kept in touch with them, but I did accomplish it in a few weeks.
That's good to know. Thank you for sharing that, Darren. I guess, yeah, Michelle, there's sometimes if you appeal to an airline's humanity, you'll find something.
I like to say, you know, it never hurts to ask, and that goes for any scenario with the airlines, honestly, from something as simple as on the ground level with checking baggage all the way to something much more major. Never hurts to ask.
What about, you know, I'm thinking so much of frequent flying happens on the company dime. Is there some way in which we can encourage companies to think more intelligently about climate change?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really important question because I think companies and individuals need to look at it and, you know, from the larger picture. I think it's so natural to think about, okay, well, just hop on a flight. But I think when it comes to climate change, we really need to start looking at how do we get from A to B? Does it need to be a flight? Can it be a train? Are there other ways in which we can change the mode of transportation to reduce our impact for however, you know, for wherever we're getting to? And yeah, I think companies should be talking about this as much as individual flyers, or we're really not going to move the needle on this.
Here's a question for you, Eric. You know, we've talked about the fact that airlines are pretty much within their rights to do whatever the crunch they want with their programs at any time. Is there any indication that when one airline steps out of line and does something particularly egregious from the perspective of consumers, do they get called out on it? Do they lose business? Or, are flyers pretty, shall we say, insensitive to some of these changes because they are so hard to understand?
Oh, I think flyers are very sensitive to them, and unfortunately, there's not a ton of recourse we have. I think one recent example of a walk back was with, you know, the legroom American Airlines was going to provide on some of its newer planes, which just prompted a huge outcry from flyers, and there was enough time for them to roll that back and decide that they'd give us that extra inch in the back. But in terms of these programs, again, due to some consolidation within the airline industry over the past two decades, the choices of airlines, the choices of frequent flyer programs, and the choice of carriers in specific areas, regions, or hubs has become, much less, has presented many fewer possibilities. People in Atlanta simply have to fly Delta a vast majority of the time. In San Francisco, you got a lot of United flights operating the most convenient schedules. So really, there's a certain matter of captive audiences. This is where credit cards really do come in handy, where you can diversify your mileage portfolio and the types of rewards available for you by choosing some credit cards that really go beyond your hometown airline or provide the perks that make that travel experience much more comfortable for you. And airlines are encouraging you to do so.
We've got a number of comments here that more comments than questions, I should mention. Steve writes, for shorter trips, there should be fewer scheduled flights using larger planes. John writes, as a small business owner, most customers don't realize that their rewards don't come from the airlines, but from the extra premiums charged to the retailer or shop. At this point, I refuse to fly because of the greenhouse emissions. Sue writes, my intent is to cancel my A Advantage card as soon as I can, find a card that's socially responsible. We need to take this climate crisis more seriously. Walk, bicycle, and take the public bus as much as we can. All great comments. Thank you guys so much. Well, Eric, so what Sue's asking for, a socially responsible card, credit card, anything come to mind as you hear her talk about that?
Ooh, this is an interesting one. I think, you know, yeah, you could just get a credit card that doesn't offer rewards in an industry that pollutes. I think in terms of realistic thinking, that there are very few actual sustainable industries out there that offer such a credit card. I think, you know, even the servers processing those credit card charges are using energy and contributing to temperature rises wherever they happen to be. So you get into a cycle of unintended consequences that perhaps would drive you a little bit crazy, like some people find frequent flyer programs due to them. I think if you are serious about limiting your own impact on the environment by flying less and by patronizing the airlines less, then sure, you could consider getting rid of those credit cards. But I think for the vast majority of travelers, not flying is simply, you know, not an option for many of us. We have to see relatives in other places in the country or in the world, and we want to take vacations with our families. And so maybe we need to think about other ways and other areas in our lives where we can lessen that impact in a commensurate way.
Michelle, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I think when people think about their overall impact when they're traveling, flying always bears the brunt of the burden. But when you look at the larger picture, it's actually cars that within the transportation sector that are the largest polluter. So it's not as easy as just saying, I'm going to stop flying. I think it's admirable for people who want to make that step. But I really think we need to look at, like I said, the larger picture in every household, for every individual, and think about, whether or not you should be driving an electric vehicle. Maybe that would actually make a bigger impact than not flying. And I want to just respond to one of the comments. The woman said that she's not going to fly anymore. And it kind of goes back to this flight shame movement. And Eric makes a good point that it's not really realistic to expect people to stop flying, and I agree. But there was a recent survey that USB, the Swiss bank, conducted that indicated that 24% of U.S. travelers have reduced their air travel by at least one or more flights in the past year due to environmental concerns. So I do think we are starting to see a change. I do think people are thinking about it more and actually acting on it.
Kind of the equivalent of meatless Mondays. You know, maybe you're not ready to go vegetarian just yet, but you can start to inch your way towards it.
Exactly.
Let's hit another phone call. David in San Francisco.
Hey, this is David. I have a question. My understanding is that we are not really getting these miles for free. I think they're built into the price of the ticket. So every time you feel like you're getting something, in fact, you're paying, it's in the ticket price. I'm always getting the cheapest ticket, and I'm all you know, getting the point. But I think all those miles are already kind of prepaid by us. Isn't that true?
Eric, do you want to weigh in there?
I suppose it's one way of thinking of it. The way I think of miles and the way that the industry is sort of leaning this way is that miles are sort of a form of rebate you're getting on the tickets that you're paying for, where, you know, each one, you earn a certain number of miles per dollar you spend on airfare. And then, you know, with the dynamic pricing models that Michelle was talking about earlier, you're going to get more and more of a set value of about 1 cent per mile for the time being. We'll see if that goes down. So you're paying for your ticket and you're essentially getting, like, you know, 3% cash back, 5% cash back and things like that. But then again, this is where an airline credit card can really help you, because you can be earning that 3% back on everyday purchases if your card earns, you know, 3 miles per dollar at restaurants or on car rentals and whatever it happens to be. So I don't think you're basically buying the miles back from the airline, or at least that's not the way to think about it.
Eric, if there's like one particular program or credit card you want to call out as we head towards the end of this hour, what would it be?
Oh, it's a tough question, one I get every day and gets harder and harder to answer as the marketplace sort of gets more diverse. But I will say that for a lot of travelers who are not flying enough to really see their loyalty to one or another carrier really build up their balance, that you might want to consider either a card that earns cash back rewards, like a Capital One card or a Bank of America card, that you can put towards inexpensive tickets at a pretty good rate, or transferable points like those offered by, like, the Amex Gold Card or the Platinum Card, or those offered by Chase Sapphire Preferred or Chase Sapphire Reserve, that you can transfer to, you know, a dozen different airline or hotel partners and really put them into the account you have when you need them.
Well, with that, I'm going to leave the last word with Bob, who writes, back to sailboats and horses and buggies, the only way to save Mother Earth. So, yeah, think about that. You've been listening to Forum with travel editors and writers Michelle Barron and Eric Rosen. And I'm Rachel Miro. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.